to love learning, to laugh,
to love,
to be loved, to see beauty,
to understand,
to bring grace
to the things that matter most.
This is Psychology America with Dr. Alexandra. Welcome to my show. For every life stage, we have questions. Let's enhance our lives together as we explore the things that matter most. Today, Dr. Michelle Pievsky, Neil Clark, and I are going to share our thoughts on how to cope while under the conditions and stressors currently brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic. Michelle, you were just on this show talking about toddler psychology, but can you please reintroduce yourself?
Sure. I am a postdoctoral fellow, which means I completed my psychology degree, and I work in one center that works on infant and toddler mental health, and another center where we do neuropsychological testing of children. So basically, I focus on assessing kids of all ages in all kinds of areas and making sure that everyone is developing in a healthy manner and getting all of the appropriate interventions that they need to support them.
Thank you. And Neil, we have invited you to be the regular guy with these two female psychologists.
Can you please? I excel at being the regular guy.
Can you please introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Neil Clark. I am happily engaged to Alexandra, but when I'm not enjoying that, I am an attorney by trade focusing on antitrust in the pharmaceutical area. And so I don't have any psychological training other than I've raised four daughters. And so maybe that helps a little bit.
That's right.
I imagine it does.
This morning, I learned the good news that Wuhan, China has no new cases. So that gives me hope. But here in the United States and in New Jersey, where we live, our cases of COVID-19 are still on the rise, as they are in many other countries around the world. And this podcast has listeners in 64 countries around the world. So I have put together some tips for adults to consider on how to cope. And Michelle, Dr. Michelle Pievsky, has put together three tips for helping children to cope. And the three of us will share and discuss these ideas now for the first time while recording this episode. So let me begin. The main theme of my three points, Neil and Michelle, for adults, it could be summarized in this sentence. Accept the things you can't control and make magic with the things you can. So I'm going to start with the second half of that sentence for my first of three points. One, make magic right where you are with what you have. This week, my children's schools shut down and they've all been doing their schoolwork from home. And Neil, you've also been working from home. And just yesterday, the governor of New Jersey asked people to stay home as part of quarantine efforts. So when I say magic right where you are with what you have, I'm talking about seeing how you can turn your ordinary and seemingly limited surroundings into something extraordinary. And I'm also talking about how we can take our limited circumstances and use them to transform and improve our surroundings, our relationships. And in front of our home, I'll give an example. In front of our home, there's a small little sunny spot. And we have a few outdoor chairs there, and it's nothing fancy. And even if the temperature is chilly on sunny days, we'll go out there, right, with our jackets. We'll feel the sun on our skin. We'll hear the birds. You and I will have coffee with the children. They might have hot cocoa, and we'll chat.
Yeah, that's what I've realized during this time is that You know, when you talk about magic, you know, if you think about it, magic is taking something and then transforming it, right? Something that's totally unexpected from something that may be ordinary. And just to give an example, you know, yesterday as we were out in the sun, you know, your teenage daughter, you know, shared with me, you know, some teenage drama that they're having. And I thought about how when we're not under quarantine and we have so many things competing for our time, attention, and, you know, events, soccer games, et cetera, we tend to not listen as well. And we tend to, you know, think about what's the next thing we can go to. And we lose these moments with our family members that can be times to understand them, to listen to them, and to connect. And so we live in extraordinary times, but yet we are under a very kind of ordinary circumstance, which is at home, cabined in, with the people we love. And what we can do, I think, during this time is to listen to them, to find out more and what's going on with them. And in that, we can transform our relationship. So I think that's where the magic can happen, through sort of ingredients that are somewhat kind of ordinary.
Thank you. And I have another example of creating magic out of a difficult circumstance. And this is my Uncle Harold, who was not a blood uncle. I've mentioned him on episodes before, but he was an uncle. He taught me that our circumstances, no matter what, we still have an opportunity to love and care for others. And I remember visiting him when I was at Yale New Haven Hospital about a month before he passed away. It was a horrible drive for me to get there. Lots of traffic. Michelle, I don't know if you've moved to Connecticut yet. Are you in Connecticut yet?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not for a few months.
I knew you were going soon. So I arrived finally in his hospital room, and I found myself marveling at his above and beyond kindness, consideration, and caring for the nurses and staff around him. And even though he was there for difficult health conditions, he seemed happy and light. And as I sat with him, he said, "Shonda," that's my family name, "Shonda, I've finally figured out, really figured out how to love. I thought I knew what love was, but I didn't really know until now." Now, let me tell you, Uncle Harold, the Uncle Harold I knew, was already selfless, loving, wonderful. So I said, "What did you figure out? What is it?" And he said, "I was thinking too much about myself and what my needs were rather than the people around me." And the best way to describe it, Shonda, is in a little book. And of course, I wanted to know the name of the book. And he's like, "Not now. I'll give you the name later." Well, it turned out that Harold had pre-arranged for this little book, which is just 4 inches by 3 inches in size, to be distributed to all those who attended his memorial service.
Hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. And the book is called The Way to Love by Anthony DeMello. So that's my first point. Make magic where you are.
Can I just add to that?
Please.
I mean, something I've been hearing people doing is volunteering to reach out and connect with others in the community who may not have family members around, who may be living alone, or elderly members of the community who can't leave even to go for walks necessarily safely. And so, like, for example, my synagogue has an outreach program where you can connect, you can call a few people just to check in, make sure that they have the ability to get groceries, and talk with them and see if they're okay. And so I imagine there are other organizations that do that as well. So there are great ways to make that kind of magic either within your own family or to connect with others in the community who may not have family, and to give to others as a way to make meaning for yourself. I love that, Alexandra. That's such a beautiful story.
And I love what your synagogue is doing to care for the people that are alone and lonely. I love that, Michelle.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
Yeah, and I, what I really like about that, about, I feel this time is, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, I can't do this and I can't do that. And the need and desire for sort of personal growth sort of takes a back seat, right? It's because I'm too frustrated about what is going on. But I think now we have an opportunity here to summon our best selves, right? To be selfless, to find those capacities that we all possess, but wish we could demonstrate more, but we're too busy. And now's that chance, I think, that with things not competing so much for our time, we can summon those best parts of ourselves to be selfless, to reach out to others. And so it's an opportunity for personal growth. And I think that's one of the ways I think that we can cope, is to think about and take inventory of ourselves and ask ourselves, what would I like to improve about myself? And if it is to be more selfless, then now's a great time to practice that.
Great point. So let me move on to the second of my three, the second tip on how to cope during this difficult time. Create structure and systems for the new normal. More structure can mean less fighting. This comes from family systems therapy, which is partially about families, but in the end, I'll talk about individuals. So this morning, Neil, you showed me a funny meme. So in it, you see a man's face, and there's a deep voice behind him that says, because of coronavirus, you are being quarantined, but you have a choice. Do you A, quarantine with your wife and child, or B, and the man goes, B, B, I'll take B. Now, if you have a family, and suddenly everyone is in the house all the time, there might need to be some renegotiating about how to live peacefully and lovingly together. And that might mean creating some rules as such. And in our home, there are 4 children, 2 adults, a dog that sheds, and 2 hamsters. And every morning, what we've been doing is that each child has a chore, which we call service, and they're responsible for their service. Also, they're responsible for their at-home schoolwork. And cleaning their room isn't enough. Cleaning their own room doesn't count. It's good, but it's only good for themselves. And service is something that helps the community. So one child might have to empty the dishwasher, and another might have to vacuum. We give them each age-appropriate chores, mm-hmm. right? But this would also apply to couples quarantined together. And the negotiation might not just involve domestic duties, but negotiating alone time versus together time, right? Because one of you might like to read quietly, and the talker might need to recognize and respect that the other is nourished by uninterrupted reading time, right?
Yes. Definitely the structure has helped in our family. Definitely putting, like I work from the house, and I tend to need to have the mornings to get a lot of my work done because that's when I think the best. And so what we've done is I have a desk upstairs that is essentially, mine until it used to be 2 o'clock, but in light of circumstances, it's now 12 o'clock and the kids respect that. And so that also means for them, that's when they do their homework. And it's a way that we aren't on top of each other. And we're also respecting kind of each other's demands and boundaries at that moment.
In that room, which is a common area. Mm-hmm. Yeah. After which you need to move to the bedroom to get your work done. And even ourselves as individuals who live alone, we can benefit from structure. And that can prevent, the structure can prevent us from spending too much time worrying. And I have a story about the founding father, Ben Franklin, in his autobiography, he talked about the structure that he created for himself every day as part of his effort to develop the virtue of order. So in the morning, he would ask himself, "What good shall I do?" And he'd wake up, he'd take a bath, he would plan his day, he would then do his creative work, he would then organize and clean, and then he would play. And this is a man who found that his most productive years of life were in his 70s, Neil.
That's amazing. You know, yeah. Particularly in that town, to be 70 years old and that productive, you know, in the 18th century is pretty amazing.
So with this quarantine, we've been giving order to our children with their schedule of first doing their study from home, then service, then exercise, and that's all before they're allowed to do electronics.
And it seems to be working pretty well. I find that the having that structure, first things first, right? And so schoolwork is still first. And putting that first, they want to do it because they know after they do it, they're able to then turn to the things they really want to do, which is TikTok and all the things that kids like to do these days. And I found the structure has worked surprisingly because we are, you know, we have a big household. And it has worked out to have that structure. So I hope that, you know, you can implement that. You know, anyone can.
Yeah.
I know we were going to do 3 and 3 in terms of giving advice, but this is almost exactly one of my pieces of advice. So I hope you don't mind me jumping in and going out of order a little bit. But one of the best things that you can do for kids to help them in times of stress is to provide order, structure, regularity, and predictability. And so it helps adults, it helps kids, and it's really one of the most important things that parents can do for their children. And if they are school-aged and they have schoolwork to do, that's a wonderful way to provide structure. If they're younger, then coming up with other activities, a regular routine, wake up at the same time in the morning, even though there's a temptation to sleep in or not, to change bedtime. You could change it from what it used to be, but set a new regular bedtime, a new regular wake-up time. Try and have breakfast around the same time. You can make meal times a huge organizing activity. Everyone can help out in the preparation. Everyone can help out with chores, right? If you do service, which is a great way, I really like that. Everyone can learn how to do these chores together. And that can be part of, for young children, part of their education too. Really functional, everyday type of education and learning through doing. And the more we can create routines for our children, the better able they will be to process change and stress. And it also really helps us stay regulated as well.
Yes. And I like the point you make about keeping meals at the same time as well, because our bodies, it's not just our sleep that's on a circadian rhythm. Our gut is on a circadian rhythm. It's quite amazing. So my third point was accept what you can't control. For this one, I want to talk about radical acceptance, which is a concept coined by Marsha Linehan, but has its origins and influence from Buddhism. And in radical acceptance, there's a sentence that says, "Refusing to accept reality doesn't change reality." For those of us who are not infected with COVID-19, there are things we can control that we can do about it. We can quarantine, we can practice physical distancing, we can wash our hands, we can do our best to care for our immune systems, like Michelle, you were saying, our sleep, our nutrition. And I want to refer listeners to a helpful episode on this show called Mind Your Microbiota about nutrition. But beyond identifying what we can control, worrying about all of the what ifs all day and constantly checking for updates won't be helpful to either our psychological or our physical health. Worrying about every possible scenario or being angry or sad about something that's not going to change doesn't change the reality, even if we think our worry is somehow going to control the reality. So how do we accept what we can't control and stop worrying? One of the principles from radical acceptance is the practice of opposite action. So you list all of your behaviors that you would do if you did accept this thing that you don't want to accept, and then you do them. So here's an example. A patient of mine has a spouse that's addicted to prescription opioids. Her spouse perceives that they need the opioids for the pain and has been doctor hopping to stay on opioids. In spite of repeated conversations about it, many tears and much effort over the years, her spouse won't get off the opioids. Now, my patient has wasted hours a day for years being angry and sad about the issue to no avail and no change. She is committed to the marriage, and she finally decided last month to radically accept and let go of her anger and worry. So what does that mean? It means she's freeing herself, her energy, her mind, and her time from this project that was going nowhere. And instead, she started running. She started developing a creative business idea with her newfound time and energy. And she's feeling better. So I encourage listeners to look up radical acceptance, learn more how to accept the things you can't control, and also for more resources on managing intrusive thoughts. I want to suggest that you listen to these episodes. One of them is called Facing Our Fears with Dr. Wolf Shippen. Another one, When Our Thoughts Get in the Way and How to Get Relief with Dr. Simon Rago. And then Facing the Unknown Part 1. That one's just me. So in sum, my three suggestions for coping for adults are: make magic where you are with what you have. 2, create structure and systems. And 3, accept what you can't change.
Yeah, I really like the third one. As you were reading and describing it, I realized the connection with that one with number one. Right, the first one about make magic where you are with what you have. What we have is ourselves, right? We have ourselves and our ability to affect change. That is what we can control best, is ourselves. And so, I can't do anything about the government's response to the pandemic. But what I can do is, where I can help in the world around me and to my family members, I can do that. And I can change that. And in changing that, then all of a sudden things seem better and I'm not focused on all those things that I can't control. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was talking about sort of in the first point about: take this opportunity to find those things within yourself that you would like to improve. Mm-hmm. Think about those that you would like to help and that you have the ability to help, and go do that. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, you don't have to accept the things that you can change, right? That's one of the things that I try to remember about that point, was you have to accept the things you can't change, but you don't have to accept the things you can change.
That's true.
And so with that, I find that, if you want to improve, say, your relationship with your teenage daughter who you've had trouble connecting with during the time, then now's a great opportunity to listen more, to be involved, find out what's going on in their lives. And in that way, you can improve and change the family dynamic. Mm-hmm.
As long as you still have the ability to think, then there is something you can control. And I'd like to share a story about that. And it's related to my faith. There's a concept in Catholicism, which I find beautiful. And it's the concept of offering your pain as a prayer. It's as if your suffering can be balled up into a substance and turned over and made use for something good. For every one of Mother Teresa's nuns, that are out there, there's a person laid up in bed who prays all day. And they offer all of their suffering for that nun, which I find an incredible idea. And this concept of offering up your suffering as a prayer is something I used because I gave birth to my four children naturally. And I turned the pain of giving birth into a prayer each time. And I specifically offered that suffering specifically for the females on the maternal side of my family as a prayer.
I'm trying to concretize that. I'm just thinking about how beautiful that is as something to do in childbirth or in times of great pain, and thinking about how to concretize that for us. Mm-hmm. You know, the pain that we're experiencing right now, if we think of it, the world is changing really drastically and quickly, and that can leave a lot of devastation in its wake. But the metaphor I've been using in my mind is it's like there's a giant raging fire right now. And once it's quelled, there's going to be this very fertile soil that's left where we can plant seeds to sow a better future. And so maybe that's kind of related to that idea of offering up a prayer and doing what we can for all of us to get through this very dramatic period of change and hope for a better future and do our part to help us now and help us in the future and grow a better society.
Yes, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I like the concept of, you know, purposeful suffering. And it also goes back to, you know, the first point about not focusing on yourself, because if you tend to keep thinking about yourself and how this pain, what is it doing to you, it can be destabilizing. It can make you not help those around you. And I think that, you know, no suffering is in vain. And I think that's sort of what we have to go through right now. And to the extent that we can alleviate others' suffering is another way we can help cope through this time.
Michelle, please share with listeners some of your ideas on helping children to cope.
Absolutely. The first thing I would say is we have to talk to our children about what is happening, because they can certainly feel it. They feel it in us. They feel it in all of the changes to their routines and their daily functioning. And if you are going out and maintaining a social distance appropriately, then you're still feeling the tension everywhere you go. And so it's really important to have a conversation with your child about it, right? Sometimes we as parents want to protect our kids. And so there's this instinct to shield them from anything upsetting and not talk to them about it, because why make them so upset and anxious? When really, if you think about it from a child's perspective, they could see everywhere that something is happening. And if no one will even tell them about it, then it must be so bad that, you know, they can't, those adult people can't even talk about it. And so that makes it even more, there's nothing more terrifying than the unknown.
And that's what humans do. If they have the unknown, they will assume the worst. And that's, there are evolutionary reasons for that. Just to keep us alive.
Yeah, and there's such a tendency as a parent to want to shelter and shield your children because you have this kind of protective instinct. But then if it's not helpful in the long run to do that, then it was really helpful to hear that, Michelle, about how that isn't necessarily the right approach here. You don't have to disclose everything, but in a way that you have to talk about it to your kids and not just try to pretend it doesn't exist.
Michelle, your children are much younger than mine. How old are they again?
My children are 3 and 1.
3 and 1. So how are you talking to them about this?
The honest truth is the one-year-old is not. we're talking body parts still. So he might get something just from us. Just from me talking to him as we go about our day. But the honest truth is I am not really breaking this down for my 1-year-old yet. But for my 3-year-old, I would say like 2 and up, they're really old enough to start having a talk, but it has to be a developmentally appropriate talk. Mm. So what I've been telling my three-year-old is that a lot of people have been getting sick. And so we have to do all kinds of things to make sure that we and other people around us stay safe. He already kind of has this like vague idea of what germs are. I have no idea what his understanding is, but he knows that they can like be on your hands sometimes. And so we wash our hands. So that's what he's come in with, that germs can get you sick. So we wash our hands. So now I've kind of increased that conversation of, you know, we have to make sure to wash our hands to make sure that we don't take germs into the house when we're in the house, after we go to the bathroom, before we eat, right? We also sing happy birthday twice now every time we wash our hands, which is part of creating a routine. Everyone in our house is now like 130 because we've had so many birthdays. but it's a fun, you could still try and turn it into a game. It shouldn't be deadly serious. And you definitely should not share all of your anxieties with them. You should share as appropriate, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure that your teenagers are able to handle a lot more than my three-year-old.
I just want to comment that I agree with not shielding children too much from what's going on. And I think part of helping them to develop their emotional intelligence is to validate, like if they see that you appear worried and they say, "Mommy, are you worried?" If I were to invalidate that with a big smile and say, "No, everything's fine," then their little feelers aren't being taught that what they felt was true and right. I would rather say, "Yes, I am worried," and then share back what's appropriate.
Absolutely. And they're feeling it outside too, whether it's through whatever media you're consuming in your house. If you are leaving and even just going for a walk and you see someone from over 6 feet away and your kid tries to get closer and you go, "No, don't do it," that they're feeling that tension everywhere. And so thank you for reminding me. I didn't point out, I definitely tell my kids, there's a lot of people who are very scared out there. And so we are doing all of these things to make sure everyone stays safe. And sometimes it can feel scary, but this is all to make sure that we stay safe, right? So for a three-year-old, it's not appropriate to open up the conversation to like, who's dying and what's happening. Mm. That's too much for them to handle. Acknowledging that there's fear out there and that there's sickness, they can understand that people get sick. My child is starting to grapple with death, but he's still not really fully there yet. And so the level of depth that I go to is we're doing these things to stay safe. And that way all of the new rituals that we're creating around like sanitizing, washing our hands, keeping social distance has a safety feel, that protective feel, and becomes something that we do to feel good.
You know, I made a mistake this past week and I think I talked about COVID-19 too much. And my 12-year-old Julia, who's a seventh grader, told me so. She said, "Mommy, you've sent us too many articles about COVID-19. I was stressing her out.
Mm. Yeah, and I think you have to sort of play it by, you know, knowing your children and their personalities. And I think that, you know, I probably shared more with the teenagers as a deterrent effect, right? Because about, you know, keeping social distance, not trying to have get-togethers with your friends, because I think they were getting that kind of pressure where some of their friends were still going out, still getting together. And so I, you know, shared with them about, you know, the lack of ventilators and other bad things that can happen to you if you get this, and how being young doesn't mean you're immune from this, and that it, you know, it has a proclivity to get in young people as much as old people, because I felt it was necessary to share that with them to act as a kind of deterrent effect on their desire to want to go and hang with friends and keep the status quo. And it seemed to have worked. And so that was one where I shared more because it was kind of age appropriate. And it also had a purpose behind it, which was to kind of get them to stop, you know, angling to go hang out with friends.
Right. Yes. At this time in New Jersey, we need to do physical distancing. Mm-hmm. What's another learning point that you can share with listeners about helping children to cope, Michelle?
So in addition to really sharing with them what's going on and talking about our fears and anxieties, it's equally important to children and adults to take a time out to check out from it and to play and have fun and do things that everyone enjoys. It seems like sometimes focusing on tragedies as they may be occurring, changes that may be terrifying, sometimes it can feel like it's disrespectful or inappropriate to lighten the situation and to think about things that aren't so important, right? This is really weighty stuff, and it is very essential to focus on it at times. But it's just as important to give your mind a rest from it. And for kids especially, they just cannot be in that place of fear for too long. And so it's really important to play with your children. And I don't just mean let them play while you continue to ruminate and just don't talk about it. You really have to leave it aside and put it on the back burner for a bit and immerse yourself fully in what you and your children are doing. And it can be a real blessing to have children. Believe me, I get that it's a lot harder. I'm not saying it's easier to be cooped up at home with your children, but it can be a real blessing. I was just talking to people who don't have children and who are working, you know, 9 to 5 hours as opposed to, I cannot work 9 to 5 hours right now. I'm working what I can work while the kids are napping or having their scheduled screen time. And it's very difficult for them to take a time out from COVID-19. It comes up at work. It comes up in conversations. Even when they try and tune it out, it just comes back to them. Whereas me with my kids, I have a 3-year-old who's not letting me think about it. He is actively guiding me to the fort that we're building. And it is essential that I concentrate on the best way to knock it down when we're done building it. So it's very important to him. And it's very important to me, too. And it's really, it is. It really is. It forces me to give it a rest. And then when I come back to it, I'm not exhausted by it anymore.
For folks that haven't been used to playing, okay, now believe it or not, I've had a number of people in my practice over the last 16 years who really, they never learned how to play. No one ever played with them and they don't know how to play. So one way to do it is to set a timer for half an hour and let the child guide, let the child decide the agenda. And you cannot do anything except go by their agenda. It could mean just looking at a blade of grass and moving a couple pebbles around. It depends on the age, but they choose the agenda. You follow and you are just with them for that half an hour. You don't do anything else except be with them.
You're describing child-directed play. I love it. We teach it in our play therapy. Yes. I would add one thing, and that is try not to ask any questions. We tend to use questions as a way to give instructions, and we don't even realize we're doing it. Kids are told what to do all the time. And so even things like, don't you want to put this block here? Oh, I don't know if that goes that way. I think maybe shouldn't we fit this thing together this way? Is you're trying to help and educate. I'm making it sound more, you know, controlling than it necessarily is, right? What's this letter? What sound does that letter make? Oh, what number is here? So you're trying to educate your child, which is wonderful. Don't stop educating your child. But for those 30 minutes or for whatever designated time, if you can't commit to 30, commit to 10. Whatever it is you could do, spread it out throughout the day. If 30 is hard, maybe add up to 30 for the day and do all these 5-minute, you know, increments along the way. Try not to give instructions or ask your child questions. Instead, comment, have your vocalizations be either praise, right? I love what you're doing. Oh, that's so great. Or just reflecting what they're doing. Oh, you're building a castle. Very cool. I see. You decided to put those puzzle pieces together backwards. I never would have done it that way instead of like, don't you think we should flip them over? Right? Because the kid is exploring and creating, and this is an opportunity. I love that you brought this up, Alexandra, because this is one of the ways that children process lack of control. And right now we're all feeling like we have less control over our lives. And that goes for children too. And so by giving them the power of controlling play, it gives them a sense of control. And they can work through the other stuff that they're experiencing the rest of the time through that play.
Well, that's fantastic. I love that idea, just letting the child sort of dictate. It reminds me yesterday when I was running on a trail. Ahead of me, I saw a dad and a small boy on a bike, and they were in front of me, so I could only see the back of them. And then the boy turned around, and he had face paint all over his face. And then the dad, who was probably around my age, 50, maybe a little bit younger, and he had face paint on too. And so they were father and son riding their bikes in the trail with face paint. And I was like, I know that kid told his dad to do it. And he said, sure, kid, I'll do it. And it was just great to see, you know, because you know, I'm out there and I don't see anyone really. And now I see all these families, you know, teenagers walking with their parents through the trails. And that probably happens very, very rarely. Anyone who's had teenagers. It's a beautiful thing to see.
Wow.
That's such a great story. And I'm sure it made you feel really great to see it, right? Like everyone's going to feel better for little play moments like this.
Exactly. And I think in this moment and finding joy around us, I think is a great way to cope, you know, to go back, you know, how to take this time and make it magical, that it exists around us. We just have to pay attention and we have to be present and we have to kind of accept what we can do and notice it. And it was kind of a magical moment to see that. I've, you know, in my, you know, 40 years of running, I've never seen that, a father and son wearing face paint on the trail together. You know?
Michelle, that's, do you have awesome. Any closing suggestions on how to help children cope with COVID-19?
Yeah, so just to reiterate the three things that I mentioned, talk to your children, play with your children, and create a regular routine. I think kind of integral to all of those is if you're able to go outside, go outside. Sometimes moving makes conversations easier. It's less intense. If you're walking, you can have those conversations. You don't necessarily have to maintain rigid eye contact. Some people, some children feel more comfortable and their ideas flow while they're moving. So physically moving, if you can go outside, great. If you cannot, then find some exercise you can do inside. And so have conversations that way and make sure you get your exercise in. That will really help. And in terms of the routine, make sure you schedule your times that you're actively reading the news, consuming media, thinking about COVID-19. And that seems counterintuitive, right? I said, don't do it too much. And I'm saying schedule time to do it. But what research shows is if you schedule a time when it's like, okay, once in the morning and once at night, I'm going to give myself time to really read like what's going on in the world and think about it and worry about it. And then I have to shut it off and do other stuff. It's going to help you worry less about it the rest
that
of the day.
That is such a great idea. Mm-hmm. Scheduling right when that your COVID-19 worry time or media worry time. It's all the same. Yes.
Well, because if the TV is blasting in the background all the time, you're going to go crazy. And if you have kids, your kids are going to go crazy. So try and do it when the kids are asleep or when they're in their screen time and zombied to the world. I tend to be very rigid about screen time with my kids, and I have definitely been less rigid. So forgive yourself. A healthy dose of forgiveness right now is essential. We're all muddling through. No one has ever been where we are before. We're all making mistakes. I don't like my kids watching TV, but if I'm going to get 4 hours of work in, they're going to watch a little TV every day, and so be it, right? So just be kind to yourself, be kind to each other, and we got to do what we got to do to make it through. And punishing yourself over much is not going to be helpful to anyone.
Amen. Thank you, Dr. Michelle Pievsky, and thank you, Neil Clark.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Best wishes to everyone out there with coping with COVID-19.
If you enjoyed this episode of Psychology America with Dr. Alexandra, show your support by leaving an awesome rating on iTunes. If you'd like to share your comments or ideas about this podcast, follow us on Facebook under Psychology America. Lastly, Dr. Alexandra has written an inspiring children's book entitled There's Always Hope, a story about overcoming, which is beautifully illustrated by Brianna Giasula. There's Always Hope, a story about overcoming, teaches children about finding joy and gratitude, even when things don't go exactly as planned, and can be found at psychologyamerica.com or amazon.com.